thank you for that. I appreciate and love you all. You know what? This group borrows very heavily from another group of significant mention in Alcoholics Anonymous. We took our format largely from a group called the Pacific Group down in Brentwood, California. And tonight, the founder of that group is celebrating 54 years of continuous sobriety. Clancy I, 54 years tonight. So we're privileged to benefit from his influence, and we thank him for that. Hey, tonight I get to introduce you to one of my favorite people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's almost sort of coincidental that on the night that we celebrate Clancy's birthday, because he is really a service champion. He's influenced an awful lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That we also get to hear the story of hope and recovery from another service giant in our fellowship tonight. And you'll forget, well, okay, maybe not a vertical giant, but in any case, tonight she is celebrating, I think if I added this right, it's 30 days, 4 months, and 1 year of continuous sobriety. Her sobriety date is June 1st of 2011. She's been active in a variety of service positions, most notably here at the Valley Group. At the Visalia Alano Nooners Group, she's been a secretary, and she serves most proudly as a sponsor. She likes the AA motto, to thine own self be true. I ask you to please give a warm Tulare County welcome to Debbie J. from Visalia. Oh, and let's give her the thanks.
Can you fix this?
Oh.
Hello? Wow, in the word. Thank you. Hi everyone, my name is Debbie and I am an alcoholic. What a warm welcome from Bill. Thank you. Thank you for asking me. You know, I consider it to be a privilege of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that early on when I first got sober in 1996. I'm very nervous and I don't know why, because I talk a lot and I talk at meetings where they have those timers and they're always like dinging, and I keep talking and they tell me, you know, they're dinging it 2 or 3 times, but now that I have this time to fill, I'm a little bit nervous, so you have to bear with me. You know, I talked to my sponsor a little while ago and said, you know, what words of wisdom do you have? She said, just get up there, talk from your heart, and share your message. So I'll start from the beginning. I grew up in Fresno. I have an older brother, a younger brother. I came from a middle-class family, went to Catholic school, and by all appearance on the outside, we had that white picket fence, Leave It to Beaver, is that it? That type of household. But unknown to everybody else on the outside, looking in, they thought it was good, but it was not. Every night was a night of hell. I can remember from the time I was 5 years old, my father being drunk. I remember one time he had a deer rifle in the house, and he thought it was funny to point at people. And then he was drunk, of course, and then all of a sudden he put it in the air and pulled the trigger and it went off. And I can still hear that ringing in my ears. Those are the kind of things my father did. And that's kind of like the time I was 5. I can remember him crashing into stores with the car, beating my mom all the time. So years continued, and I was about 7 or 8 years old, and my dad came home from the doctor, and he told us that the doctor told him if he didn't quit drinking, he was going to die. And I remember him going to an AA meeting that night. I didn't know it was AA at the time, but that's what the doctor suggested. And I remember coming home with the blue big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, throwing it across the room and saying, those SOBs don't know what they're talking about. And I really didn't know what was going on, only that I didn't know what AA was, but I knew if my dad continued to drink, he was going to die. And he continued to drink. He didn't take the gift of AA. He continued to drink. And I can remember as a little girl thinking, why am I not important enough for him to quit drinking? You know, why does he continue to drink? So years went on, and I'll tell you, There was every kind of abuse in my home that you can imagine. And whatever comes to your mind when I say abuse, that's what was happening. And of course, my brothers had different kind of, my brothers got the beatings, and my mom got the beatings, and I had the sexual abuse going on. And I never told anybody. It was like my little secret. And here I am going to Catholic school, being taught a God, but really in my heart believing there should be no God. How could there be a God to allow the abuse that was going on in my home? And so I got older and I got married. My mom and dad ended up, my mom and father ended up divorcing because she finally started fighting back. And when I, at the end, he would beat her every night. And, you know, I look back, now that I'm thinking back, like, my mom tried to give me the best life possible. Like, I did baton and dancing and anything you could think of to put a little girl in. Our Little Miss pageants, all that kind of stuff. And now I know it was to keep me out of the house. Although, my mom did not know what my father was doing to me. So, I got married and I moved away, and on Mother's Day, 1983, I was 20 years old. My birthday was going to be in like 10 days, and I didn't hear from my father. And I thought, you know, something's wrong. So I got a phone call from one of his friends and said my father was rushed to the Valley Medical Center, that is what it was then. And they said that he was drunk, and my brothers were like, no, he's not drunk. You know, there's no way he can be drunk on a six-pack of beer. Anyway, my father was in a coma for 7 days, and then I was 20, he was 43 years old, and he died in my arms as a direct result of cirrhosis of the liver. He was bleeding out of every orifice of his body. I need to back up a little bit. As a little girl, there were two things I vowed that I would never do. I would never be an alcoholic, and I would never allow a man to beat me. You know how, I don't know for the men, but us women, when we're young, we play with our animals or whatever, and we're going to be a nurse or a teacher or whatever. I didn't do any of that kind of stuff. I just knew I was not going to be an alcoholic. I didn't have any other goal, not to be anything else other than not to be an alcoholic. Well, after my father died in my arms, because he's like that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde the book talks about. I mean, he was the best father in the world till about 5 o'clock in the evening when he drank that first can of Coors. You know, and the bottom line was he was my father. I was the only girl. All my cousins were boys, so I was pretty spoiled. But I learned real quick how to drink because I was devastated. My conception of life was you grow up, your parents get older, you take care of them, and then they die. You know, even though my father was that monster when he drank, he was still a good guy when he didn't. And 43 was awful young to me to die. But I learned real quick how to drink because I learned real quick that drinking made me not feel. And so I was married at this time. I had a couple kids, but I drank, so I didn't like, I didn't act married. Okay, you know, let me back up a little bit. I'm sorry. When I was 15, my parents were still together, and I was spoiled. As much as my mom could spoil me. Well, I had stopped going to Catholic school because they couldn't afford it, but for some reason in my mind, I wanted to go to San Joaquin Memorial. And my mom worked two jobs to send me there. But at 16, I got pregnant. Catholic schools frowned on that. Not supposed to happen at Catholic schools. That was in the 70s. Things are different now. And that time, my mom and dad had the decision to put my baby up for adoption. Now you can't do that. And, you know, now these girls, ladies have all these rights. But guess what happened? So anyway, I go through my married life, running amok, causing all kinds of damage. So now we're at 1991. I have three kids. And I find myself pregnant in front of the judge, not pregnant by my husband, by somebody else, and I'm on my way to prison. And I remember the judge looking at me and telling me, Miss Jackson, if you can tell me you're an alcoholic, I'm going to send you to 2 years in the California Department of Corrections instead of 4 years. Well, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That was my vow, not to be an alcoholic. But I was an alcoholic, and I know how to say what somebody wants to hear. So I was able to tell him that, not believing it in my heart. But I told him, so he'd only sentenced me to 2 years instead of four. I'd never been in trouble as a juvenile, never been in trouble up until my 30s. I'm thinking, I'm little, I'm not prison material, but the judge didn't care. So he sent me to 2 years in prison. I'm pregnant, not by my husband, and here I am in prison, pregnant. My mom was just diagnosed with emphysema, and what am I going to do? I still had 2 years to do. I felt it was really selfish to have a baby and put her in foster care and then get out and take her out. 2 years of bonding she would have done with another family. So the midwife at the prison, she heard what was going on, and she asked me if she could adopt my baby. So here was my solution. There's a midwife at the prison. Obviously, she's established, and she really wants a baby. So I chose that. But I want you to know, my husband, after I had that baby and all the papers were signed, and he didn't know they were signed, he went to the prison to try to get that baby to take care of her for me until I got out. And, he was wonderful through the whole thing. He brought my three kids to see me every month. They got to spend two nights with me. But I got out and I continued the same behaviors. And, I want to welcome the newcomer, and I want to express to you, in my opinion, it doesn't matter how you got here. It doesn't matter if your significant other thinks you need to be here, if you think you got here on a court card. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you want to do from this day forward. See, because in 1996, this is the kind of things I did as a mom. I left my infant son in an infant carrier of a bar, parking lot, by himself, to go in that bar and drink. I also thought it was okay to raise my daughter in a motorhome in Barstow with no running water and no air conditioning. I thought I was a good mom because I was staying at home with her, if you want to call a motorhome a home. Well, CEPS decided that wasn't the right thing to do, and they came in October of 1996, they came and took her. And I didn't know where she was for a couple days. I finally got a visit. She wasn't walking when they took her. 2 weeks later, I get a visit. She's walking, and she has a look of devastation on her face that will forever be embedded in my heart. And The CWS worker looked at me and said, the people that have her want to adopt her. And I looked at that lady straight in her eye, and I told her, there's no way in hell that that's going to happen. She said, well, then you need to get some help. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did. My very first meeting, I walked into the Alarm Club, the side door. Big Al had his Harley backed up to the door, stuck out his great big hand, and said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, what the hell? Where am I at? So I walked. And if you're new and you walk into the door and you don't know what to expect, or you're holding your head down because of some of the things you did, I'm right there with you, because I can remember the very first day that I walked in there. It was October 29th of 1996. Very ashamed, very scared, but not being an alcoholic, because remember, I vowed I was never going to be an alcoholic. So I went to an outpatient program, and I went to meetings every day. And I started to kind of figure out kind of like what you guys were saying, but like when you told me the steps are going to set you free and they're going to keep you sober and they're going to help you deal with your past, I'm looking at you guys like you guys are crazy. You know, well, you can't just read them. You have to apply them in your life. So I kept going, not really, you know, we read in chapter 3, we must concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. And see, I didn't want to do that. But I kept going to meetings anyway, because I was actually at that time going through the motions. I was going to do whatever I had to do to get my daughter back. And about a month and a half into my sobriety in 1996, I was at a meeting in Tulare, and there was an older gentleman there by the name of Jerry D. And I call him my AA hero, because for the first time I actually heard something that was said in the meeting. And what he said was, if you have hurt the spirit of the people that love you, you effed up. But he said it how, you know, he wore what he said. But it was like the light bulb like turned on in my head halfway, because I had done that. I had hurt the spirit of the people that love me, my kids, my mother. I didn't realize at the time that I hurt my own spirit. I had grounded my own spirit. And so I went to the Lama Club at noon, like I did every day, the very next day. And we hear in here that God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. Because I wasn't willing to take your suggestions. I wasn't willing to get a sponsor. And I really wasn't willing to admit to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I wasn't going to do that. But the very next day after I heard Jerry D say that the night before, a lady stood at the podium and she said, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go home and look in the mirror and look deep in that mirror and see if you can tell yourself you love yourself. And if you can't, you're probably an alcoholic. And God did for me, because I am not one to take somebody's suggestions, but I did that. I went home and I looked deep in that mirror and all I could do was cry because I hated who Debbie had become. I hated that I had hurt the spirit of the children that loved me. I hated that I had hurt my mom's spirit. And that was my moment of clarity. That was the moment that I could admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic and I need help. And that's really when the program of AA took off for me. I was willing to get the sponsor. I was willing to take suggestions. I was told to learn from the old timers, to hang on to them and learn from them. And I did that. And I saw people like Albert and Abraham who went to meetings and had this friendship that I so wanted, you know, and I learned from them without them even knowing, you know, and Jim, you know, and there's others that I just, you guys don't even realize what you've taught me. And so I started doing the deal. You know, I got the sponsor, worked the steps, was getting some serenity, getting some peace, went back to a COS to get a degree, hadn't been to school in over 20 years, and I didn't think I can do it. But the people in Alcoholics Anonymous kept telling me, you can do it, you can do it. So from 1996 to 2000, everything was good. And then in 2000, my mother died in my arms in February 2000. And she was very sick, and she would say, I'm going to that graduation in May if I have to go by ambulance. She didn't make it. She died February 22nd of 2000, and my world changed once again, right then and there. The moment that monitor thing went flatline, my life changed. And, you know, I called somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning, right before she died, and don't even remember calling them, but that person telling me, just go in there and hold her hand and be with her. You know, and you guys carried me through that. And I'll tell you, when I felt the power of the program was at her funeral. Because I was there, but, you know, not really there emotionally. And when I got to speak about my mom, I looked out into the church, and there was more people from AA than there were of her friends. And they didn't even know my mom. That was my first lesson, that you don't just honor the person that passed away. You're there for the survivors. And it was like the most, it was a spiritual experience. So then 2 months go by, or 3 months go by, and I graduated in May, wanting my mom to be there so bad that she wasn't. And once again, it was the same people that were at that church that were at that funeral bulletin rooting me on for graduating. You know, and then my friend Jane died the same year, and once again, it was the same people, not, and some others that carried me through that. See, because it wasn't the, it's the quality of the friendship in AA. You know, we all think we have friends out there, but they're not. I don't know about yours, but mine weren't friends. My friends are in here. And I was only friends with Jane for like 3 years, but it was the quality of the friendship that AA gave us. And I am forever grateful for that. And the fact that my mom was able to have seen her daughter, who she so desperately wanted to get sober. For 4 years, I was sober when she was alive. And it was the most awesome 4 years. You know, I made her proud, and I made her happy. And, you know, I never told anybody about that abuse going on. actually until my father died. And then it all came out. And it was very difficult for my mother because she never knew. Because if she did, she probably would have killed him. She never knew. And it affected a lot of people, but it's just something that, you know, you hear that kids can stuff things and it takes something traumatic to bring it out. And that's so true. So I continue in my sobriety, my aunt, this is 2000, doing good, I have a good job, good relationship, living the life, I had it all going on, got invited to go to a couple speaker meetings out of town, they paid for the gas or whatever, and I thought, wow, I must really got this. I don't even think I need my sponsor anymore, I think she probably needs me by now. You know, and I got that ego, and I got complacent, and I thought I was too busy. You know, I thought I was too busy to call my sponsor and to get into the book still and to be of service and to sponsor other women. One of the most important things that you have to do to stay sober is working with others. And I stopped doing that. So I actually relapsed before I took that drink. You know, somewhere between 7 and 8 years, I got very complacent. And our book talks about we know no defense over that first drink. And I'm telling you, use me for, you know, I had to go and, I guess, check it out. I don't know. But all I know is I was in the wrong place at the wrong time and not good in my head. And somebody asked me, did I want to drink? And I didn't even think twice about it. You know, and so now, wow, 8 years from, I celebrated my 8th birthday. Even though I can say I actually relapsed, I think, before I actually took the first drink. You know, I did celebrate 8 years, and then shortly after I drank, and I was embarrassed, ashamed, felt guilty, knowing that I could have walked back into Alcoholics Anonymous the very next day, but I didn't, and very mad at myself, and didn't want to face you guys, and you know, and I missed the friendships that I had. You know, my kids didn't understand why AA wasn't coming to save me, you know, but I didn't reach out to anybody. You know, in those 8 years that I was sober, Albert called me every Father's Day to tell me Happy Father's Day because he knew that I was a single mom. And you don't, I can't even tell you what that meant to me. And I missed that. But I ran amok. You know, and like if my bottom was right here in 1996, and in those 8 years I had built my life way up here, well, after I relapsed, with less than a year, my bottom was way down here. It didn't take very long to lose everything that I had gained. And that's what we mean when we talk about the disease being progressive. You know, it's like I picked up right where I left off. And once again, I hurt the spirit of the people that love me. And, you know, as a mom, I did something that moms shouldn't do. I ran with my son. We were best drinking buddies, best casino buddies, best, we ran the streets together. And, in October of 2010, our house got raided. And, my grandkids almost got taken by CWS. My son went to jail. And I didn't. And once again, I was on a run to get the bail money, however I had to do to get him out. And I got him out, and he got off the recovery court, and he took it, and I kept drinking. And about 4 or 5 months into his sobriety, well, first of all, I have to thank Alcoholics Anonymous, because the day he was offered drug court, he knew who to call, because my kids grew up around AA, and he knew. He called Charlie, and Charlie took him to a meeting that day, but I was still running them up, thinking that, I don't know what I was thinking. And on May 5th of 2011, while I was walking in Goshen, in the middle of the day, I don't know, but God intervened, because I was stopped by the sheriff and taken to jail. And they kept me for every 12 hour. I don't ever get any breaks when I go to jail. I don't get out early. I don't get early kicks. They're going to keep me to the second that they have to. And they kept me for 12 hours. And it was the worst 12 hours that I had ever spent in jail. And I've been to jail many, many times. And I got out. And I did the same thing. So I saw my son every day. And he was really involved in AA, was the secretary for the nurse group. And every day that kid would look at me, because I would see him every day, and he'd say, "Mom, think you want to go to a meeting?" And every day I would say, "No, Michael, I can't go to a meeting at noon." And he'd go, "Well, Mom, there's a meeting at 7 in the morning." And I'm like, "Michael, I guess I can't do it." And he asked me every day, and every day that I said no, I saw that much more pain and hurt in his eyes. But he never gave up. My own son 12-stepped me because he asked me every day. And on May 31st of 2011, as always, when he left my house, he said, "Mom, do you think you want to go to a meeting tomorrow?" And I looked at him, and I said, "You know, Michael, I think I can do that." The kid got in his car and drove down the street and called me to make sure he heard what he heard. And then he couldn't sleep all night long, wondering once again if it was Mom's making another false promise. But I didn't. He came and picked me up on June 1st, and we walked arm in arm back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, things are so different. I want to back up a little bit about the daughter that I had in prison. When she was 7, the people that had her brought her to Visalia, and we had a really good visit. And then for about a year or two after that, we had communication, and all of a sudden it stopped. And I didn't know why it stopped. I do know now, because every time she would get in trouble and act out, she'd say, "I'm going to run away and go find Debbie." So that her parents at that time felt it was good to stop all communication. So I come back into the rooms at AA again on June 1st, knowing that things had to be different. Knowing that when you guys asked me, "Debbie, what happened? You know, why did you relapse?" Well, I really didn't work through what I needed to work through. I really didn't give my will and my life over to the higher power of my understanding as I should have. I held on to that one resentment. And I knew this time that I had to find forgiveness for my father, even though he's been dead for 30 years or 30 plus years, or I'm going to drink again. But I didn't know how to do that. But I remember somebody telling me, "You know, Debbie, you didn't forget everything you learned in 8 years. What you did is you have a new sobriety date." And I started thinking about that, and I remember my favorite story in the back of the book is Freedom from Bondage. And I remember on page 552, it talks about what to do if you have a resentment and how to find that forgiveness. And it tells you to pray for that person for 2 weeks for what you want for yourself. Pray for them even if you don't mean it. And I knew that I had to do whatever I had to do to get to that point. So I did it faithfully. And, you know, it took me longer than 2 weeks. It took me for about a month and a half. But I woke up one day with real peace and serenity in my heart. And I looked in the mirror, and for once, I had clear eyes. I knew that the sunlight of the Spirit was working through me. And I know today that only came from that forgiveness. That was my spiritual awakening. And you know, my life today is good. You know, I have 6 months sobriety in January. I wasn't sure what I was gonna do. I'm 50 years old, I have felonies, you know, what am I gonna do? And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and I found myself calling Mothering Heights to see if I could volunteer. And because I have this passion today for Alcoholics Anonymous, the gift that you people have given me, because I know what AA and the steps and the fellowship did for me for 8 years, and I know where my life went when I gave up on AA. When I stopped doing the steps, applying them in my life, and really living them. And God guided me in the direction to work in recovery, work with women, work with their children. And I'm thinking, wow, maybe that's because I have felonies and I don't really have much of a choice, but no. But you know, it's the passion. Serious. I try to get those, when I do something, I got to do it all the way. But anyway, in fact, I do. I went to court before I relapsed and got a certificate of rehabilitation, which automatically goes to the governor, so you can get a pardon, and I screwed that up. Because I decided to drink. But anyway. So anyway, I'm on this journey, and I walk into Mothering Heights, scared to death, not knowing really what I'm doing. I thought I was just going to volunteer and, like, spend the night with the girls and the babies. And before I know it, I'm actually an intern, and I'm going to Carr to be a certified addiction specialist. But the gifts that I have received, I can't even tell you. Like, my own kids, when I was drinking, they didn't want to be around me. I have a lady in here right now that asked me to be there for the birth of her twins. That's not me. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's another lady in here that maybe I shouldn't go there, but I've got to see these women repair their life and have their babies and a chance and a gift. You know, and I hear some people say recovery homes, they're not, you know, it's not AA. Well, you know what, it is AA, because they've been introduced to AA, and I see so many success stories. I am like Albert. There is no wrong reason to get here. However you got here, God bless you. Call it an intervention from a higher power. You know, I want to back up a little bit to that little girl I had in prison. When I came back in, I still really wasn't feeling the higher power thing. I really wasn't. I was trying to fake it to make it once again, but, you know, just not really sure. And so last year in July, my kids are saying, Mom, we want to find Hannah. And I'm saying, okay. And so we spend all night, one night up, we're going to every imaginable website you can think of, like MySpace.com, Facebook, YourLife.com, AnybodyThatCanHelpUs.com, to try to find this girl. And so my kids say, Mom, why don't you get a Facebook? And I'm like, are you kidding? I'm too old. They go, no, you're not. So we did my profile. That's all it was, my profile. I have no friends. Turn off, because I don't know how to do all that. So I turn off the computer, and if this isn't God, I don't know what is. I turn off the computer, and I go to bed. The next day, I'm at home all by myself. There's nobody around. I'm going to get on this Facebook thing and try to figure it out, not letting my kids know, because I don't want them to think I'm stupid. Well, when I signed into my Facebook, my daughter Hannah popped up and asked me to be her friend. Now, if that's not God, I don't know what is. Everything good that I have today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a wonderful relationship with that child today. And if you don't think that's something, the son that I had when I was 15, I went home about a month ago and he was sitting in my living room. That's only because of who I am today. You know, if you're new, I don't know why you drink. I know why I drank. I drank because I didn't want to hurt. I didn't want to feel. But you know what? You don't ever have to hurt again. You don't ever have to drink again. You know, when it's doing the deal, what we say, it's getting those steps, learning to apply them in your life, and living happy, joyous, and free. I have nothing material today. I don't. But you know what? I have the best gift, the best anything, is I have peace and serenity in my heart that I haven't had for so many years. You know, I had a thought and I lost it. I'm getting embarrassed. I know that prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't care about you. I didn't care about your kids. I didn't care about my kids. I didn't care about myself. And today I do. Today I have a conscience. and the steps have given me that. You know, thank God for the steps and the order that they're in. Thank God that we're told we can't pick and choose how we do them. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That is the path of Alcoholics Anonymous, doing the steps in the order they're in. So this time around, when I needed to make my amends, the one person I needed to make amends to is my dad. Not my father, my dad. The man that came into my life, that anything good out of me, I've learned from him. The man that is a retired captain of the Highway Patrol, who would used to go in the courtroom in uniform while his stepdaughter was on her way to jail once again. He never gave up on me. So the amends I needed to make this time, I really needed his forgiveness. So I did my step, got to step 9, and went to him. And he told me, Debbie, I don't forgive you, and I don't have to forgive you. See, he's been reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, so he can get to know his daughter, but it was like a knife going into my heart. He didn't say that he didn't love me. He just said he didn't forgive me. Thank God for the foundation of the steps, because I'll tell you what, standing there with him, I had to suck up those tears and walk away and process it. But had I not had those foundations, the steps prior, I don't know what would have happened. And I know he loves me. And I know in time, every day that I stay sober, I'm making a living amends. And on my birthday this year, my dad handed me the keys to his Impala, handed me the insurance with my name on it, my own insurance card. And that might not sound like a big deal, but for me, it was a really big deal. You know, he is my hero. The one man that has never, ever given up on me, even after my mom died. And I so badly hurt him when I went back out. You know, things are different. I have clearer eyes, I have a bigger heart, and I know it's because of page 552 in the big book. I know it's because I had to forgive that man. And I work with women, and they say, how can you forgive him for the things he did? Because I have to. Because if I don't, I'm going to drink again. And I don't ever want to drink again. You know, I know I kind of bounced around. You know, I'm very, very passionate about AA. And I know that my higher power is leading me on that road. I really don't know very much. All I know is that one day at a time, I can stay sober. I can make a living amends to my family, to myself. I can be an example to the newcomer that this is what happens. My life is good today, even without the material things. You know, where I go from here, only God knows. You know, I do have respect and love of my children. Very excited. I raised 4 children, but now I have the 2 that I gave birth to. And once again, that's only because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll leave you with this. My very favorite saying in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is, the only real freedom a human being will ever know is doing what they ought to do because they want to do it. And today, my passion is to pass on the gift that AA gives to us freely. Thank you for letting me share.